Good morning, everyone. The State of Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners will now come to order December 11, 2024. This meeting will take place in person and virtually by Zoom. The board meeting location is 1740 West Adams Street, Phoenix, Boardroom B. Ms. Vanderveen, can I get a roll call, please?
Dr. Kevin Lee?
Present.
Dr. George Camacho?
Present.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson?
Present remotely.
Dr. Wayne Bennett?
Present.
Ms. Angela Powell?
Present. There are four board members present in person and one board member present virtually via Zoom. This is a quorum for today's meeting. We will now state any conflicts of interest which may any of the board members may have and who will be recusing themselves from today's agenda. If you have a conflict of interest, board members, please state the tab number and the reason for the recusal. If you have no conflicts, please state so, and then state facts as such. We will begin with Dr. Wayne Bennett.
Yes, Madam Chairman. I will be recusing myself today on item tab number 5 in the matter of Dr. Stratman, as I have a long-term personal relationship with him.
Dr. Camacho? Dr. Leeds?
Yes, tab number 6 for professional reasons.
Mr. Turbinson?
None for me.
And I also have a conflict of interest, tab number 5, Dr. Stratman. I did some consulting work for him. Let the record show that the board members have been furnished with investigative reports and exhibits for each matter on the board's agenda. Would each member please indicate your name when it's called and whether you have reviewed the materials?
Dr. Kevin Lee.
I have reviewed the materials.
Dr. George Camacho.
I have reviewed the materials.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson.
I have reviewed the materials.
Dr. Wayne Bennett.
I have reviewed the materials.
Ms. Angela Powell.
I've reviewed the materials. Okay. My name is Angela Powell, and I'm the public member and the board's chair. I would like to welcome our newly licensed licensees to the board meeting. Thank you for attending. I hope you find this meeting helpful and informative. You're required to attend 3 hours, 3 full hours, and the staff will dismiss you at the third hour marker. At this time, I'd like to remind everyone, please, to turn your cell phones off or put them on silent. If you're appearing virtually via Zoom, please mute your microphone until your matter is called. For your convenience, throughout the meeting, there are vending machines right outside Boardroom B, and the restrooms are across from the elevators. This is an open meeting, and it's being recorded. The audio from this meeting will be posted on the board's website. Please be sure to state your name when you are speaking on the record and speak slowly and clearly into the microphone. To protect the complainant's privacy, refer to the complainant or the patient during the meeting by initials only. We will now go into our next agenda item, the consent agenda. Items listed on the consent agenda are items number 4, tab number 1. In the matter of the cases recommended for dismissal, we have Kevin Beaumont Turley and Dennis Miller. And to accept the proposal signed by the consent agreement for voluntary surrender for Tad Nathan Kenny, and to open a complaint for the following: Salish Balakrishnan, I hope I pronounced that correctly, apologize if I didn't, Patricia Hemthorn, and David Ketchum. Items on the consent agenda appear with recommendations from the board staff. The board members have reviewed all of the materials and recommendations. We are prepared to vote on each matter as it appears on the agenda. Pulling the matter means that you are a party or a complainant to the matter and do not agree with the recommendations, and you would like up to 5 minutes to address the board. If you wish to pull the matter, please raise your hand so that I can note that you wish to pull the matter. If the matter is removed from the consent agenda, it will likely be re-agendized for another meeting. Yes.
I would like to briefly address whether to open Dr. Balakrishnan and Dr. Ketchum.
Okay.
So Angela, she can have up to 5 minutes to address the board. And
before we go on.
Before you. Okay. Or you have the option to pull those two items and vote on the other ones. Yep. So that's how we would like to proceed.
Let's have Ms. Jarvis go ahead and make her statement, okay?
Perfect, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, members of the board. Nice to see all of you. It's been a few months, so happy holidays. Mandy Carvis of Wickersmith, for the record, appearing on behalf of two of the matters that appear on the whether to open agenda, both relating to malpractice settlements. So I know normally the board will open, but I did want to briefly address them. In particular, the initial one, 2025-004, Dr. Salish Balakrishnan. I would like to ask the board to consider not opening a matter in this instance, even though that would be unusual, but my request is for the following reason. Dr. Balakrishnan saw the patient in question one time for a colleague who rents space at his office. Of course, it's always the favor that you're doing. One time after that, the patient indicated that they were having some leg pain. They went and sought some other treatment and asked doctor to reimburse them for that treatment. And rather than paying out of pocket, he turned it into his insurance, and it was $832.62. So it was reported as a malpractice settlement because obviously Arizona is a $1 reporting state. But with hindsight, obviously he wishes that that's something he would have just dealt with the patient directly. I understand that you can't consider a lot of collateral information when it's at this stage, but I did at least want to let the board know that we are talking about a very nominal amount that was reimbursed to the patient just because they went and got some additional treatment that they believed was due to an exacerbation of a problem after the adjustment that he performed. The matter was completely resolved. And again, it is before you just because his insurance company issued that payment rather than him. So I would request that the board just make note of that in the record, but not open a complaint. But I understand if you have to, just for the reasons that that's typically how it's handled. Okay. And then I'll just address 2025-005, Dr. Ketchum. That is also a settlement of a malpractice action. I do believe that that is one where the board will likely require more information, and we're happy to provide a written response to address the nature of the complaint and the reason for the settlement. I just wanted to let the board know that that was the basis for both of those matters. And again, I understand that you will likely open with Dr. Ketchum. My request would just be with Dr. Balakrishnan if there is an opportunity to potentially not open given the nominal amount of the reimbursement. That would be my request. Thank you.
Thank you. And do we have the option?
Madam Chair, members of the board, ARS 32-3203 requires Health Prevention Regulatory Board to at least initiate an investigation into a malpractice matter to determine if there's any violation. So it's not optional at this stage. Of course, you know, that information will affect where that goes, but at least initiating the investigation.
So it's possible that we wouldn't open.
Is that we would open the complaint and do the investigation, and based on the information provided, mm-hmm. that it would just come back to you on the consent agreement, on the consent agenda for dismissal.
Okay.
But there's not, I think, what Casey's kind of saying is there's not really a provision
right.
that prevents us, that allows us to not open it at this point.
Okay. And then you would like us to pull David Etcher. Okay. All right, then.
Why are we pulling them?
Just David?
No. They're both the same. The reason is still the same.
Okay.
We have to open an investigation.
Right.
Just procedural question, Madam Chairman.
Yeah.
It would seem like either way, even if we, I'm certainly sympathetic to the very small amount of settlement if we see anything like that. But even then, we would have to then come back mandatorily and readdress it anyhow, even if we pulled it off the agenda, so consent agenda. So while I'm sympathetic, I guess my feeling is that I don't see what would be served if we didn't. I kind of see the same outcome. I don't think it would expedite matters if we were to pull it.
Okay. Okay.
I guess I would have a question legally with regard to that.
I suppose if there's really the way I read the statute, there's no, at this stage, no alternative but to initiate the investigation,
yeah.
And which is what it's on the consent agenda for, although at this point, I suppose we've had discussion on it, so it might have been pulled by
this government
already.
Is it not up to the board to decide after discussion whether we want to pull it or not? Don't we have volition on that?
It sort of sticks in one hand, half dozen the other. We've already sort of discussed it, so I'm not sure functionally how much is on the consent agenda anymore. The consent agenda items generally are just voted on.
I'm unclear about that, but I'll get it clarified later.
So you're saying that we need two motions then? One motion to accept the consent agenda for item 2024-011, Kevin Turley, and 2024-013, Dr. Miller, and 2023-019. Except the voluntary surrender for Tad Penny, and then to open the complaint 2025-003 for Dr. Hinshorn, and then we need a separate motion for the two that we pulled. Is that my understanding?
I think that would be cleaner.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, I would move that we accept the staff recommendations for on the consent agenda for items 2023-011 in the matter of Dr. Turley, 2023-013 in the matter of Dr. Miller, 2024-019 in the matter of Dr. Terry, and move to open an investigation on item number 2024-003 on Dr.
Do I have a second?
I have a question on these ballot arrangements.
Can't discuss both.
We're in the middle of the motion.
Okay, we're not in that anymore? Okay.
Do I have a second?
Madam Chair, this is Dr. Kevin Lees. I second.
Okay. Those all in favor?
I'm Jim, I think that we need to have the opportunity to discuss after a second. Is that correct?
Okay.
Let's discuss. Dr. Macho wanted it.
Macho?
Say something on this?
Well, although I believe that matter is not subject to this particular motion.
Okay.
Others? Discussion? That's got it.
And,
Jorgensen?
We're jumping around a lot on this. I don't know where they're at.
Right now there's a motion and a second to accept four of the items on the consent agenda to move with the staff recommendation. So now that's what you're deliberating.
Is this on Underman, Grassman?
No, we're on tab number one, the consent agenda.
Okay.
So that's what you're deliberating. If you're done deliberating.
We are done deliberating.
Okay. Then you need to vote.
Okay. Now.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Is this for a dismissal or continual?
Those opposed, say nay.
Okay, nay.
Okay. We have four yes and one no. The motion passes.
Madam Chairman, I would like to make a motion to remove the remaining item
do you want these to come back before the board for the same question about opening them?
Or do you want them to come back to you at the same point?
Well, I want to do what's required by law to do the minimum. So what's the most expedient
way
to do
it? So then it would be to vote.
So since you've already voted on everything else on the consent agenda about these two matters, you could, if the board wanted, just make one motion to accept the staff recommendation to open a complaint on the 2025-004 Ballard-Christian and 2025-005 Ketchum matters.
So the motion then is to accept the staff's recommendation to open a complaint relative to tab 2024-004 Ballard-Christian and 2024-005 Ketchum.
Do I hear a second? This is Dr. Kevin
Lee. I
second. Those opposed?
Is there discussion?
Would you like to deliberate? Dr. Camacho?
Yes, go on.
Mr. Turbinson?
No.
Dr. Lee? Okay. Dr. Lee?
Yeah.
Dr. Bennett?
Totally happy.
Okay.
Ready to vote.
All those in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Aye.
Deny, I'm sorry. Okay, the motion passes.
And the vote was four ayes and one nay, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're moving on to tab two. Is that right, Ms. Vanderveen?
That is correct.
Next on the agenda, item five, number two, which is in case number 2023-010, Dr. Ronald Amelora. Dr. Amelora, are you present?
You should be present via Zoom.
Dr. Amelora, are you present?
I am. Can you hear me?
There you are. Okay, good.
Good morning.
Doctor, would you state your name for the record, please?
Ronald F. Andalora.
Okay. And you are represented by attorney?
Correct.
Correct. Okay.
Yes.
And your attorney is?
Mandy.
Ms. Jarvis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Good morning. Mandy Carvis of Wicker Smith appearing on behalf of Dr. Andalora.
Okay. Would you and your attorney or your attorney like to make an introduction, or excuse me, a statement? You have 5 minutes.
Briefly, do you want to do the summary?
Let me address
the issue briefly and what potential resolution. Dr. Andalora closed his practice in July of this year, so he's no longer practicing full-time. He does, however, still occasionally treat family and friends, so he would like to keep his license rather than officially retiring. But in light of that, since the complaint that brings us together today was in large part a billing issue, but then the issues that the board determined were at issue were primarily relating to documentation. Some of those recommended options don't make a lot of sense since Dr. Andalora is not essentially actively practicing. He's only providing occasional treatment to family and friends out of his home as opposed to out of his office. He does want to keep his license, though, rather than going into retirement status. So what we would suggest or recommend as an appropriate resolution of this matter would be some sort of non-disciplinary outcome, either a non-disciplinary advisory letter giving him information or stating something about the record keeping, and or non-disciplinary order for continuing education. He is willing to take continuing education courses with respect to record keeping to the extent he will obviously continue to keep records as he treats friends and family. But in light of his status, we don't think that the intensive PBI course for record keeping is appropriate here. We would think that some lesser amount of continuing education would be a more appropriate resolution. If you have questions for Dr. Andalora regarding the treatment at issue or the billing concern at issue, or would just like to hear from him more about his intended, I guess, semi-retirement practice, he'd be happy to address that. But in light of his status, that was that, those are the options that we believe would be most appropriate to resume this. And lastly, should Dr. Andalora decide that, you know what, retirement isn't for me, and I don't like just treating friends and family at home, and were to open, you know, his practice back up, we would assert to the board that we would, that he would realize that he would need to address the record keeping in a more significant way at that time, and he would commit to informing the board if he did intend to return to full-time practice. So again, he's happy to answer any questions that the board members may have via Zoom, but that is my proposal in terms of a resolution of this matter today. So thank you.
And Doctor, I'm going to pause for just a moment. Ms. Vanderveen, I forgot to ask you for a board brief. My apologies.
No worries.
If you wouldn't mind, please.
No, sure. Investigative facts to the allegations are improper billing, making false statements to a patient or third-party payer, and failure to maintain adequate records.
Thank you. Okay. Is Doctor, would you like to make a statement also?
In regards to what Mandy said or in regards to the complaint?
Just either or. We have all the materials. We've read all the materials. So
Okay. Let's
put something extra to add to that.
No, I agree with Mandy. I, up until this morning, I was very happily retired. But I am, I do see a few friends and family as needed out of my home. I do consider myself retired, but NCMIC, my malpractice insurance company, advised me that even if I see one person, it is in my best interest to keep my license and my malpractice current, which I agree. So that's what I'm doing. As far as the complaints, you have all the material. I feel like my office, as I've stated, we did everything we could. The bottom line is the patient unfortunately let us know too late to satisfy the insurance company's requirements for resubmission of claims. And that is really what it's come down to. If the patient had let us know sooner, we would have done everything in our power as we did to accommodate any requests that they had, which we did. But unfortunately, it was too late.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor. Is the complaint with the initials TO present? Second attempt. Is the complaint with TO from initials TO present? With hearing no response, we will proceed with questioning Dr. Andalora. We'll start with you, Dr. Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This is Dr. Wayne Bennett. Good morning, Dr. Andalora.
Good morning.
I appreciate your desire to stay in practice, and I also, in having reviewed your records, appreciate that there's a need for improvement. The question becomes, what's an appropriate level of correction here? And I guess I struggle a little bit with the notion that we would reduce the expectation of record keeping based upon the fact that there would be less record keeping being kept. I mean, a medical record has a minimum standard and it needs to be met, regardless if it happens once a year or 1,000 times a year. And so I think we need to strike a balance. I guess my question to you, sir, is what continuing education have you engaged in recent, say in the last 5 years with regard to keeping proper medical records?
Well, what's required by our zone every 2 years, I do the record keeping. Most of my CE hours are in the clinical front. I would strive to be the best clinician I could then. So I didn't take any additional record keeping other than what was required by the state of Arizona.
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions.
Dr. Lee.
I have no questions. Thank you.
Mr. Turbinson, any questions?
No questions. Nope, thank you.
Dr. Camacho.
Yeah, Dr. Andalora, how are you?
I've been better, but thank you.
I reviewed your record. And your note-keeping definitely is, extra the word, prehistoric. But you definitely have to keep up on those records. And when was the last time you took Dr. Friedman's course on record keeping?
Doctor who, I'm sorry?
Friedman.
It's been a few years since I've... Is that the gentleman? I'm not sure. I know who that is. Is that the gentleman who teaches out of Phoenix?
So it's online now. You can get it online. You can do it.
Oh, okay. Now. Yeah, it's been a few years, for sure.
Okay. I think you intend to stay with your license, right?
I'm having a hard time hearing you. I'm sorry.
Okay. You intend to stay with your license and keep on practicing, say, even part-time?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Then what I would suggest you do is look into Dr. Friedman's course on record keeping and start taking that course immediately if you want to keep your license going.
Dr. Pacha, I appreciate
Thank
that
you,
you want to help.
Pacha.
Doctor, excuse me, doctor. But we can't make recommendations for him to take any one specific doctor's course.
Well, right here it says that if he doesn't do that, he's going to do the PBI medical record keeping course, as it's recommended here.
We can deliberate.
That's $1,400. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay, what I'm saying is that he has the option to do this other course instead of paying $1,500.
But it is not within our purview to make that kind of a recommendation. We have to be very careful. It would seem like we'd be taking sides, for example.
All right, okay. I could tell you that, Dr. Baturi.
There are a number of courses that could be taken, not any one in
particular.
Okay. Doctors, would you like to deliberate more on this matter?
Madam Chairman, this is Dr. Bennett. I tend to agree that as I said earlier, we need to find a balance, and we do have multiple options in terms of what we can require, as long as it's accredited, recognized educational option. I guess I'm leaning towards the PBI 30-hour program is more extensive, but is there not another lesser?
There is a lesser PBI course. So there is the MR-17, which is there's 3 hours pre-course and then 14 hours live, and there's no record keeping, like follow-up record keeping component to it.
No post-encounter
no
audit.
There's no post-encounter audit. It's just the course.
It sounds like something that might work for someone who wants to not retire or retire, but still treat family.
Right.
So that they can, you know, get the education and not have to worry about being audited because there's really nothing to audit.
Correct. And just to be clear, one of the challenges with this situation is we've run into as a board historically is having that disciplinary probationary agreement with the record keeping audits, and there not being any records, and then you end up with that violation, and then the board ends up with either staying the audit, and we end up with orders that are years old that we can never get closed out because. So I think Dr. Bennett's right, striking a balance is important,
mm-hmm.
And trying to find a way forward.
And
I was just going to say, if I may offer, I know that obviously that the board as of late likes the PBI course because of the nature and extent of it. However, also there are obviously other board-approved continuing education courses that are available with respect to documentation prior to the board beginning to recommend the PBI course. There were also recommendations in the past for completion of a certain number of hours just within the amount of record keeping. The board could still order that and it be courses that have to be submitted to the board for pre-approval if they're not otherwise approved. So in order to strike that balance, I would suggest that something more along the lines of 3 to 6 hours of continuing education and record keeping as opposed to this particular course would be most appropriate in this situation. Dr. Andalora would obviously take whatever courses or hours you require, but that would be my request and suggestion at this time.
Madam Chairman, this is Dr. Bennett. I'm glad we're having this discussion for the record because on the one hand, that spectrum that we're considering on the one hand is a doctor who's got a few flaws and needs to maybe brush up, having kind of fallen behind in terms of record keeping, and that's when we would contemplate something like 3 hours. But that's not what we're dealing with here. I think we need more correction than that. That said, the option of having the doctor select from a spectrum of approved cases, providers, is also good. When we really need to see specific correction, we rely upon PBI because it's really intended for that purpose, for remedial corrective measures versus these kinds of things. So I guess where I'm coming down on this, and I'm not ready to make a motion because I'd like to know what the other doctors think and what the board members think, but I think we should give the doctors some volition with regard to who the vendor for the continuing education for record keeping might be, but I think that it should exceed the 4 hours. I think it should be in the realm of 8 to 12 hours, because we really do need to see some correction to even meet the minimum baseline.
This is Dr. Kevin Lees. I would agree. I also understand that we've had previous cases where someone wasn't able to meet the audit requirements just because of the amount of patients in the year, and this may fall into that area as well. So recommendation of more of just the classes without the follow-up audits would be preferable.
Mr. Turpinson?
I echo that. I'm not quite as familiar, being not a doctor myself, with the specific PBI course, but I do kind of like the, given this is a little bit of a unique situation, the ability to just set an hour requirement specific to record keeping.
Dr. Camacho?
I get this thing to over property. Definitely, I recommend that he do some continuing education as far as record keeping and learning the basic. Well, the program that's now, to follow the SOAP program, because it's easier for everybody to follow that program. I think 12 hours is more than enough to pick that up. And the courses, and of course, I'm not supposed to say the name, but that would be one of the best ones that I would recommend.
Madam Chairman, question?
Yes.
Dr. Bennett, for the record. So what we're contemplating here is authorizing board staff to enter in a consent agreement. What are we contemplating?
If you were only considering continuing education, it would just be a non-disciplinary order for continuing education.
Madam Chairman, I would move that the board issue a non-disciplinary educational order to the doctor for 12 hours of approved continuing education credit on the subject of record keeping to be completed within 90 days.
Okay. Do I hear a second?
I second that.
Okay, Dr. Camacho, second. All in favor? Any discussion, further discussion? Dr. Lees, Dr. Camacho, Mr. Turbinson, Dr. Bennett, any further discussion? Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to tab number 3. This is item number 5, which is the initial action for case number 2023-026. Dr. No Carranza, am I pronouncing that correctly, doctor? Are you present today, doctor?
He's on, but he's muted.
Doctor, you'll need to unmute. We can see you, but not hear you.
He's not muted?
No, he's not muted on this. Doctor, can you hear us? Okay.
Yeah,
try raising the volume on your computer.
We can hear Mitch.
Just barely did you check the volume on your computer.
You may need to call in.
Doctor, you can, if you can hear me, can you call in? Do you have the number? Do you have the number for him? We're gonna send it down.
Oh, it's on the website, but we can drop it in the chat.
Just 1 minute, Doctor. We're going to send you the phone number. It's on the website. There's nothing at our end, right?
No.
We can hear mention, Doctor. Yeah.
Okay, so we want to move them. Dr. Brown is a representative, do you know?
He was not in the
Doctor, you can hear me, right? Just nod your head, yes. Okay. Use the phone number and call in so we have your audio, okay?
Connie's chatting it to him in the Zoom chat. So give us just a second.
Okay. Give us just a second. We're zooming it to you in the Zoom chat. Looks like he's silent now.
Someone's phone should be ringing now.
There we go.
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you to the end of the meeting. Yep.
All right. Doctor?
Yes.
You can hear us. Now we can hear you. Great.
Okay. Okay. Great.
And, Doctor, are you represented by counsel?
No, I am not.
Are you represented by counsel?
No, I am not.
No. Okay. If you would like... You can please introduce yourself for the record, first of all. And then if you'd
like,
you can
make... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
My name is Dr. Noe Carranza.
Okay. We've read the board materials that you've provided us with. At this point, Ms. Vanderveen, can I get a board brief?
Yes, the investigative facts and allegations are danger to the health, safety, and welfare of the public and failure to timely report.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Carranza, this is, we're going to give you 5 minutes to make an opening statement if you'd like. You self-reported to us.
Yes.
Would you like to make an opening statement?
Yes. So I self-reported an incident for back in September of 2022.
Doctor, can you speak up just a little bit, please?
Yes, so I self-reported an incident back in September of 2022 where I was at a Cardinals game and I was arrested for a DUI. I was not trying to minimize the situation, I take full responsibility for my actions, but I was moving a vehicle from one portion of the parking lot to the opposite portion of the parking lot to where my driver was. I admit my mistake. Again, I take full responsibility, not trying to minimize the situation. It wasn't correct. It wasn't right. And I have done everything that I needed to do regarding the situation, regarding fines. Was in jail for a day. Had an interlock device on my vehicle. I don't know the exact amount of time that it was. And I also did alcohol and drug counseling that I was required to take with hours of education for it. Again, I'm not trying to minimize the situation. I've learned a lot from the situation, and I take full responsibility for my actions, and that is why I self-reported.
Okay. Thank you, Doctor. Ms. Van Der Veen, can we get a board?
Okay.
I'm going to stop following this format.
You're okay.
Okay, doctors, do you have any questions? Board members, excuse me, do you have any questions of the doctors? Start with you, Dr. Bennett.
Yes, this is Dr. Wayne Bennett. Good morning, Dr. Carranza. Is it Carranza? Is that correct?
Carranza, yes,
Dr. Carranza, I appreciate your self-report. I appreciate that you have taken the measures appropriate for the matter. I do have a question, and that is why you failed to report this arrest to the board in your January 23 application for license renewal.
I'm sorry, what was that?
My question is why, Ms. Van Der Veen?
Just to clarify, he reported it with his renewal. However, he didn't meet the 10-day requirement after the arrest and charges.
I see.
So he reported it on the renewal, and reported it appropriately on the renewal as required on the renewal. However, missed the 10-day reporting requirement after the incident.
I retract that question.
thank you.
I'm looking at the officer's report here, and
yes, sir.
It says that you accelerated very quickly in the parking lot, operated the vehicle at excessive speed, and fishtailed tires all around the group of pedestrians in the parking lot. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, I just wanted to understand that this was a little bit more than just a minor issue. And I'm also looking at the fact that your blood alcohol content at the time was measured at 0.9, which is quite a lot higher than the legal limit. How many drinks had you consumed that day before you got into that car?
To give you an exact number, sir, I do not know the exact number. Again, I was at the Cardinals football game. I remember having a couple of drinks while tailgating and, you know, maybe a drink or two inside the game. Again, I'm not trying to minimize the situation, not trying to downplay it, but.
All right. So you'll concede that you had a fair amount of alcohol on board at the time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And I call this to our attention just because when we determine, you know, what kind of corrective measures appropriate, we have to take into the consideration how egregious the behavior was. I think that it was fairly significant. It was a fairly significantly bad choice. And I just wanted to get that clarified. Right. With that, I have no further questions.
Dr. Lee?
I have no questions.
Dr. Camacho?
Yeah.
Are we keeping you from something, Dr. Kumar?
No. I just have to.
Mr. Jurgensen.
Yeah, just one question. Were you aware of the 10-day reporting requirement?
Was I aware of the 10-day reporting requirement? I the only thing that I was that I can recall is having to report it when we renew our license. I didn't have a court date or anything for an extended period of time, so I didn't know what charges were going to be brought against me, if that answers the question.
Let me ask, what diligence, I guess, did you do to figure out. Did you contact the board at all after?
I spoke to my attorney, and under their counsel and their recommendation, I took the steps that I took when renewing my license.
Okay. That's the only question I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Camargo? Right.
Question is, Dr. Carranza, your blood alcohol level was registered at 0.9, right?
Yes, sir.
You know what it says? Okay, legally, it'd be drunk to 0.01. In reality, you were slightly below being considered legally drunk. Were you aware that you were trying to show off the brand new Corvette or something like that you fishtailed out of the parking lot?
No, sir, I was not trying to show off. There was actually a vehicle that pulled out in front of me, and then not trying to minimize the situation, take full responsibility, I pulled out as well. As we were waiting to, basically I was waiting for my driver. Again, I'm not trying to make an excuse, but I was not trying to show off, no.
Okay, that's fine. But you did report on your renewal that you had the DUI, correct?
Yes, sir.
Your renewal form. When you renewed for your license.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right, sounds good. Okay, I have no further questions.
Just for clarification, the legal limit for alcohol test is?
0.08.
I'm sorry?
0.08.
To the extent this is relevant,
right?
There's a few different kinds of DUIs, but there's an impaired to the slightest degree that doesn't have a number.
Right.
So strictly, I don't know if there is a legal amount of alcohol you can have to drive.
I guess I was just a little confused. Dr. Camacho said he was below the legal limit, I guess, not important. It's not relevant. I apologize for the interruption. Okay. Deliberation. Mr. Turbinson. Dr. Lee. Dr. Bennett.
No, Madam Chairman, I'm prepared to make a motion if there's no further discussion.
Please.
I would move that the board issue a non-disciplinary continuing education order for Dr. Carranza to take the PBI Ethics and Professionalism course within 90 days and to take and pass the Arizona Jurisprudence Exam with a score of 85% or higher within the next 90 days as well.
Okay, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Dr. Kevin Lee, is that second?
All in favor?
Discussion.
Discussion. I'm sorry. Discussion? Any discussion?
Yeah, I think that Dr. Carranza has accepted his responsibility and has paid his due dues. And I think we should just give him a letter of dismissal.
Dismiss the case? Okay.
So you have the motion. That would be a separate motion.
Right.
So.
Okay,
you need to vote on Dr. Bennett's motion
first,
correct?
Yeah, there's an open motion.
All right.
If that motion fails for whatever reason, it dies, and then another motion can be made.
Correct. Thank you.
And if this motion passes, then there won't be a need for that particular second motion.
Gotcha. Okay. So we have a motion. Yep. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Those opposed?
Nay.
We have one opposed and four in favor. The motion passes. Okay. Doctor, the staff will be in touch with you about the next steps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If he has questions, he can call the board office, but staff will provide him documentation.
Okay, staff will, if you have any questions, just call the board office and the staff will explain to you what you need to do next, okay?
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Of course. Excuse me. Okay. Next on our agenda is item 5, tab 4, which is the initial action case number 2024-028, Dr. Daniel Grant. Dr. Grant, are you present today?
Yes.
Welcome. Come forward to the table. Thank you. And you are represented by legal counsel?
Yes. Good morning, Chair, members of the board. Flynn Carey for Dr. Grant.
Okay. For the record, introduce yourself, doctor.
I'm sorry?
For the record, introduce yourself.
I'm Dr. Daniel Corey Grant.
Would you or your attorney like to make, excuse me?
Yes, I would.
Board brief, yes.
Just okay. The investigation, facts, and allegations are danger to the health, safety, and welfare. Habitual use of drugs or alcohol and failing to timely report.
Okay.
Chair, members of the board, if there's going to be any discussion concerning any of the investigative facts related to any of the mental health or protected information, we would ask for an executive session on those items. Out of respect for that and not to throw us into executive session so I can make my statement, I'm going to be a little bit obtuse about those issues. If you want to talk about them in more detail, we are happy to do that in executive session. So I'm just going to refer to those in sort of a blanket way. In my comments.
All right.
And it's not out of try to minimize or anything. It's just that we're not having to go into executive session so I can make comments. First of all, I would note that there is there's a board proposal for the board's consideration. That is the product of board staff and us actually communicating to try to get to what we think is an appropriate outcome that balances a few things. It gives the board an opportunity to have him in the interim, meaning you're not committing to anything at this stage, but in the interim, have him demonstrate some level of proficiency under the EVAS. So that was where that first step came from. And then upon completion of that, we think that the next step, which is the jurisprudence and the PBI course, is a way to then meet the education or rehabilitation side from a board perspective. And so I think it really threads the needle nicely. It's the product, again, of the parties working together to try to get a resolution packaged for the board, as opposed to the board having to start thinking about this the first time when this case hits you today. What I would note is, and this is again, I am here and I know Dr. Grant is here. We're trying to be results oriented on this one, as opposed to, picking any kind of argument. I would note, though, that I do disagree with the danger to health, safety subsection. And the reason for that is there is a line of case law, including a case called Webb versus the Arizona Medical Board. And there's also a case called Winters. But the Webb case says essentially that the jurisdictions of the boards have to be limited to the practice of whatever profession they are regulating. And so when you have external conduct without evidence that it actually had an impact or potentially could have an impact, and it didn't involve a patient or the medical/chiropractic public, it actually is improper for a board to attempt to discipline in that area. And the position that we've taken in front of a number of the healthcare boards in Arizona, there's a case called Webb that does support us on that. That very says essentially it has to happen either to a patient or involving the actual provision of care. What's kind of unique about this situation is he was not actively practicing at the time this occurred. And then after the incident occurred, he immediately took significant remedial steps, which we detailed in our materials. So I think the nexus between the practice of chiropractic and this incident is really not there. I'm going to give you the failure to report on time. We're not going to challenge the board on that, but what I would ask the board to think about on that one, he did on his own when he realized, oh, I may have a reporting obligation, he called the board and reached out. And then he brought on new counsel. I'm not criminal counsel in this case. He brought on administrative law counsel, which is specifically trained in this area. I think you see this a lot where criminal counsel unfortunately doesn't advise healthcare professionals to report within the 10 days. You know, I know that just from doing this for so many years. A lot of criminal counsel will call me on that issue a lot. So I think it's understandable. But once he did find out he had an obligation, he did report. And I think that nothing was lost here because when he did report, cooperated fully with the board, and there's no evidence that his late report caused any harm or prejudiced the board or the ability of the board to investigate. So the issue's there. We're not going to tell you that he didn't late report, but I think if you could put it, we'd ask that you put that in context. And then finally, obviously, regarding the allegation of the habitual use for drugs or alcohol, the one thing I would say is, and why I think a non-disciplinary makes a lot of sense, is as a board, from a public policy perspective, you always have the opportunity to remove obstacles for anyone who might be impaired to come home and tell the board that they either need assistance or you make it as safe as possible for people to approach their board. I frequently speak against board disciplining on the basis of any kind of impairment, because what you do sometimes is for every person you actually do get to talk to and discipline or take action, there's 10 or 15 others who are under the radar still. And you never want to create additional obstacles, in my opinion, to any kind of impaired professional coming home. And so my advice, my suggestion or my request is always, when you do have these issues, looking at it to determine if there has been adequate rehabilitation, which I would suggest in this case has occurred, but also think about, you know, do we want to be in a position where we're creating barriers to entry to rehabilitation or making someone think that they should be hiding these types of issues? So again, I think that the informal sort of multi-step interim procedure that we've suggested really does kind of touch on all these issues. And I think at the end of it, it will leave the board firmly convinced that this person is and remains safe to practice.
Thank you. This was a self-report, so there's no complainant. Do any of the board members have questions, starting with you, Dr. Bennett?
Yes. Good morning, Dr. Wayne Bennett, here for the record. Mr. Carey, thank you for your comments. I appreciate them. And question is, where's the nexus, if any? And so I do have this question because I see on page 33 of the records from the arresting officer, he stated that that Dr. Grant, you offered to adjust him. Is that correct?
No. I asked him if he wanted to get into the hot tub. I said, put your gun to the side. You want to get in the hot tub with me. I have no idea where the adjustment came.
Did the arresting officer know that you were a doctor of chiropractic?
I don't know that because I was under the influence. If I told you, I would not know.
Yeah,
I did listen to the...
I appreciate that. It's just that my perception of this report is that I don't have the impression that this arresting officer even had the knowledge that you were a doctor of chiropractic, and so it would surprise me that they would originate that...
He didn't even know my name. I told him I was God.
Yeah, I get that. But the point is that I don't know why an arresting officer who didn't even know your name would say that you offered to adjust him if he had no knowledge of who you were or whatever. And I understand that as you've noted, you were not really cogent at the time. It just concerned me that's in the record because... That sort of, I'm not saying it's a nexus, but it looks kind of like a nexus where we have, you know, a doctor offering to provide treatment to a patient in an impaired state. I'm not saying that is the critical point. I'm saying it's getting kind of close to sounding like it. And during the course of your treatment, which, by the way, I commend you for, it's hard work. Can you just give us a summary of where you think you are relative to all of that?
Would it be possible so that he can speak freely to go in executive session with the licensee so that he can provide that confidential information?
I would entertain such a motion.
Okay, I move that we go into executive session.
Is there a second?
Second.
That's Kevin Lee, the second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
And then it's this has confidential.
Yes, patient information. And it was Dr. Bennett who was on the record, but he didn't give my name. Okay. So.
Okay, so we can move into executive session, and then we'll just take Mitch, can I call you?
Yeah, just give me a call. You have my cell phone, right?
I think so.
Okay.
Yep, I got it.
We're back in regular session.
Are we ready to entertain the motion? Or do we have Mr. Turpin's
motion?
Okay.
I'm here.
Turpin. Yeah. I would entertain a motion at this time.
Madam Chairman, this is Dr. Bennett. I would move that the order, as was mentioned and agreed upon by board staff and council, that we take the staff recommendation, which I believe included PBI boundaries, PBI plus 24, as a non-disciplinary education, or I should say, PBI boundaries, PB 24, with accomplished impressions and recommendations letter. Is that part of what was discussed? Okay. Preceded by taking and passing the two parts of the EBAS substance abuse section.
Okay. We have a motion. Do I have a second?
Is that please a second?
Okay. Discussion? Dr. Croucho? Dr. Lee? Dr. Bennett?
None.
Mr. Durbinson?
Nope, none from me.
Okay.
So before you make your motion, I just want to clarify it. So the motion is to issue an interim order for taking and passing the EBAS two parts, which would be on substance abuse. And then upon successful passing of the EBAS, you would authorize board staff to issue a non-disciplinary consent agreement for taking and passing the jurisprudence exam and then completing the PBI course on professional boundaries, complete with an accomplishment, impressions, and recommendation letter. Is that your motion?
That may not be what I said, but that's
it
what I intended.
Okay. I just want to make sure we were clear on what we were doing.
And is that the motion you seconded, Dr. Reed?
That's correct.
Okay. So we discussed it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck, doctor.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. We will take a quick 10-minute break. Feel free to stand up, walk around. We'll be back in 10 minutes. This meeting has been reconvening. The time is 10:39. As stated earlier during the opening portion of the agenda, Dr. Bennett and I are recusing ourselves from this matter. Tab number 5, 2024-039, Scott Stratman, D.C. I will be turning the meeting over to Dr. Lee.
This is Dr. Kevin Lee. Next on the agenda item is item 5, tab number 5, which is the initial action of case number 2024-039. Dr. Scott Stratman, D.C.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Dr. Stratman, are you present today?
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Wonderful.
Are you represented by legal counsel today, Dr. Stratman?
No, I am not, sir.
Okay. Please introduce yourself for the record.
I'm Dr. Scott Stratman.
Thank you. This is Benjamin. Can I get a board brief?
Yes, sir. Investigation facts and allegations are failure to properly supervise, failure to properly notify and register our chiropractor.
Dr. Stratman, the board members have read your response to the complaint. You have 5 minutes to make an opening statement, if you like.
Certainly. I think it's rather self-explanatory. My clinic is a multidisciplinary clinic. In other words, we have medical doctors, chiropractors, physician's assistants, nurse practitioners, registered nurses, et cetera. in this case, therapy was being carried out on a particular patient. And the notes clearly state at the bottom that supervision of therapy, when unintended, is done by the medical doctor. That's specifically mentioned on the bottom of the SOAP notes. Because the chiropractic supervision of therapy modalities requires the chiropractic physician to be physically on the premises. A medical doctor does not have to be physically on the premises. The chiropractic assistant is also a medical assistant, certified medical assistant. She was supervising unattended physical therapy under the license of the medical doctor. That was clearly noted on the records. I've done research on this. I've hired consultants. I know I'm clearly in the right in terms of a medical doctor's ability to supervise physical therapy modalities in the manner that it was being done. And we make sure that we put the clarification of that just so that there's never any misunderstanding on the actual SOAP note pages themselves explaining that it's being done under the supervision of a medical doctor. So that's what the complaint was about, and I feel it's incorrect as the therapy was supervised by the medical doctor, not myself, and clearly noted on the record.
Thank you, Dr. Trevin. And I'm under the impression that Layton is not with us today. Is that correct?
I'm sorry,
that
who
is correct.
Not?
That is correct, yes. The reporting officer, Shane Jenkins from the Arizona Department of Insurance and Financial Institution, is not.
Do any of the board members have any questions for Dr. Stratman, starting with Mr. Turbinson?
Yeah, just a few. So I'm not entirely understanding your position on this. Is it that you can have a chiropractic assistant performing what clearly falls under, treatment provided by a chiropractor or chiropractic services, as long as a medical doctor who's not a chiropractor is there supervising?
No, let me clarify. First of all, the person that provided the services is a medical assistant as well as a chiropractic assistant. And the therapy modalities were not chiropractic therapies. There were physical therapy modalities supervised by the medical doctor and billed as such. So the question, though, is as a chiropractor, I can supervise physical therapy modalities when I am physically on the premises. I cannot supervise them when I am not physically on the premises. In this case, I was not physically on the premises, nor did I claim to be. Instead, the supervision was carried out by the medical doctors. The medical doctors do not have a limitations of supervision only related to being physically on the premises. So this was not a chiropractic service. It was a service overseen by the medical doctor with the bills and SOAP notes clearly stating as such. It was not a chiropractic assistant being supervised by me, but a medical assistant being supervised by my partner, who's a medical doctor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand that a little more now.
This is in a multidisciplinary practice. I've gone to great length to make sure I was legally right since I've done this for many, many years. And that's why I make sure on the SOAP note pages, it specifically states the supervision is done, in this case, by Dr. Otto Urich, a medical doctor, not by myself. Yet the board complaint was because I was supervising when the SOAP notes say I was not. I was supervising only when I was on the premises, which is what I'm allowed to do as a chiropractor. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is a interesting issue just because your colleague, Dr. Urich's view of supervision is a little different, but she's not a chiropractor, and so I'm not sure what we really have to do with this.
It's a medical bill supervised by a medical doctor with the therapies administered by a medical assistant who granted is also a chiropractic assistant. It's sort of like we do surgeries through my clinic. We have a surgery center. If we send out a bill for a surgery we performed, I guarantee you I did not do that surgery. Yet it could still come out in my clinic name, supervised or carried out by a surgeon, of which I am not. Mm-hmm. So this is a medical service overseen by a medical doctor with the notes clearly saying that. The only supervision I did was when I was in the office with the patient, and then I could do the supervision legally by statute. So I bend over backwards to make sure that this is noted on the notes, and you'll see on the information I gave you, it's very, very clear. I have that on every single note to make sure that we would never be in this position, but we are anyway.
Okay. I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
All right.
Dr. Camacho?
Yes, Dr. You're part of this clinic. In essence, you never had anything to do with this person performing these therapies. And was your name at all on the soap notes that you were available or present, or just the name of your clinic?
On the days I am not there, my name is nowhere on the notes. On the days when I am there, I have my name on the notes because I'm dictating notes. So on the days where I'm in supervision, it's clearly my name. In the notes in question, it's the medical assistant overseen by the medical doctor.
So your name is nowhere near?
That's correct.
Okay, no further questions. Thank you.
Dr. Stratton, I did have a question. One of the accusations is failure to register as chiropractic assistants. We have a list of chiropractic assistants who are not registered on our site. Do you know if that's been corrected?
Yes, every chiropractic assistant we have is registered. That said, we also have medical assistants. So every chiropractic assistant is registered. But we have a multidisciplinary clinic. We have also nurses and medical assistants, not just chiropractic assistants.
According to the board's information, I do not think that that's correct. We do not have updated lists of your chiropractic assistants registered on our site.
You know, I have to apologize. In the complaint that I got, I didn't see any subject matter of the registration of the chiropractic assistants. So I didn't come with the documentation. I didn't know that was a subject of today. If you'll see my response, I don't address that because I don't know that it was ever even questioned. So if that's a question, I'd like to be able to get the documentation and show you the date that they were registered if we have a chiropractic assistants there. But I didn't know that that was even going to be a subject for today.
So we have, based on the information that was in the report, we have 6 individuals that, based on this report, were functioning as chiropractic assistants that are not registered with the board.
Okay, I would have to, I know each of them are registered chiropractic assistants and have gone to school for it and got their accreditation.
Right, but did you provide the registration to the board? And notify the board, because under the statutes and rules, you have to notify the board within 7 days of hiring a chiropractic assistant.
Right, and my
then they have a year to complete their training.
And I'm sorry, my office manager said she did, but again, I didn't verify that aspect because I didn't know it was going to be a subject today. If you'll see the actual note to me from the board, in which the investigation was taking place on the issue we just discussed. That was the scope of what we were supposed to be discussing. If we can continue that aspect of it, I will check, get my facts straight, and I'd be happy to answer to that once I'm prepared to answer to that. But I didn't know that was going to be a subject matter now. To the best of my knowledge, each of our CAs has been registered. They've done the appropriate course of care, appropriate studies, et cetera.
Is that something we can add part of the motion, and just making sure that those are updated?
Yes, absolutely. That would be appropriate.
Dr. Stratton, one final question. I understand that your clinic now is, or the clinic that you were in during this accusation, has now been closed or is closing. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct.
And are you working in your own clinic now?
Well, I'm working in another multidisciplinary clinic.
Okay. And are you an employee, or is there an office manager, or are you working for a LLC? How is that set up? Who's responsible for these decisions now?
the same person. In actual fact, the medical doctor that was my partner in the previous clinic retired, and we started a new clinic with a different medical doctor, surgeon partner, and most of the personnel stayed exactly the same. So if there is an issue, it would be consistent with both clinics because it's the same staff that shifted over. But I know for a fact they've all gone through their schooling, and I'll verify whether that they've been registered again. I wasn't prepared to answer to that. I didn't know that was a subject matter for today.
Board, any further questions? Would the board members like to make a motion? Please state your name before beginning your motion.
Motion, Dr. Camacho. I think if Jim, doctor, are you going to make sure these CAs are registered with the board?
Yeah, if they are not registered, they will be registered by the end of this week.
Is there a deadline that?
I assume
it's 7 days from the date of hire.
Would have to be from the date of hire. So at this point, well, what do we have?
So you can, whatever you'd like to memorialize, the staff is happy to execute. Whatever you feel is reasonable, I believe the recommendation from the staff was to have all chiropractic assistants registered with the board within 10 business.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay. If they're not done, I have no issue with that whatsoever.
Yes, I motion that we make sure you have your CAs registered with the board for, and within 10 business days.
You got it. Totally agree with it.
Good. Second?
I'll second that.
Do we want to discuss anything about the suggestion, the recommendation for the non-disciplinary order of continuing education, so that that's satisfied through his explanation?
I don't think that, sorry.
No, go ahead, Mitch. I'm sorry.
I don't think that that's necessary in these circumstances.
So before you make, can I just clarify the motion so I make sure I understand what is happening? So is Dr. Camacho, is your motion to dismiss the complaint based on no basis to proceed, but to request that Dr. Stratman register all his CAs within the next 10 business days with the board? Is that your motion?
That's correct. That's my motion.
You're good with that, Mitch? Sorry, Mr. Sherbertson?
Yes, that is what I second.
Thank you.
Okay, so the board will vote on the motion. All in favor say aye.
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 None opposed. The motion passes with 3 ayes, none opposed, and 2 recused.
Thank you, folks.
Just let the record reflect it is 10:54, and Ms. Angela Powell and Dr. Wayne Bennett have rejoined the meeting.
Madam Chairwoman, I need to repeat myself for Kevin.
Okay.
Just Kevin.
All right. Tab number 6, Dr. Lee has recused himself. Board will hear on agenda item 6, tab number 6, the review, discussion, and possible action for case number 2023-056, Dr. William Gunderman, which was previously before the board. Dr. Gunderman, are you present today? Dr. Gunderman, you need to unmute your...
Got it, I think.
Your computer?
Unmuted. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Are you represented by legal counsel today?
I'm representing myself today. I have no funds to hire any attorney.
Okay. Dr. Gunderman, just please introduce yourself for the record.
Yeah, I'm William Gunderman. I'm license number 4962 and holder of PMMTP number 2736 and acupuncture number 394.
Thank you, sir. Ms. Vanderveen, could I have a board brief, please?
This matter is before you today as a probationary review for Dr. Gunderman. As you will recall, back in November 6th of 2023, the board entered into a consent agreement with Dr. Gunderman for the following item, which was to first, take and complete the medical ethics and professionalism provided by PBI in education. Then also it was to take and pass the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners jurisprudence exam with a score of 85 or better. And then also to reimburse the board for the cost of the investigation in the amount of $1,000. And then was to request approval from the board with a start date, practice name, practice address, and the names and professional credentials of any owner of the practice where he may be, he will be practicing. He was to notify the board if the respondent chose to cease to practice, and then he was required to renew annually. Those items, the first item, to take and pass the medical ethics and professionalism provided by PBI, he was to have that completed by May 9th of 2024. A review of his compliance shows that he is not compliant with that matter. Also due on May 9th of 2024 was to take and pass the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Service Cruise Examination score of 85 or better. He is also non-compliant with this matter. Due November 6th of 2024 was to reimburse the board the cost of the investigation of the amount of $1,000. Also due November 6th was to request approval from the board last year was to provide information regarding his where he would be practicing and who he would be practicing under, also to notify the board if he ceased to practice, and then finally due August 31st of 2024 was to renew annually. He is not compliant with that item either. And I would also like to point out that the memo from Ms. Zaragoza reflects that additionally he never contacted board staff to ask for additional time or to, in regards to the payment, request a payment plan. So we've not asked for any extensions or adjustments to any of these items. They are all just used as non-compliant. So with that, that completes my report.
Okay. Dr. Gundermann, obviously we have all the materials and we've reviewed them. You have 5 minutes to make a statement if you'd like to make one.
Okay. This process requires at least 5 different components. Many have many steps to those components, and they don't make any sense. It looks like an all or nothing thing where I come from. If I don't comply with all of it, then I'm not in compliance. And this is how it went down. I missed the deadline, something in March or May, March. I can't remember. It was generous from the time of the order, which was in October of 2023. And I think it was probably too far in the future. And I, hung myself with my own rope a little bit on that one, because I think I ran out of time on certain things. But, the most difficult. And the one I'm out of $1,450 that class. And I attempted to complete before the August 31st deadline. And I was unable to because of where I live. The telecommunications didn't get through. And I had logging in and things like that. I sat there watching my money disappear. And they gave me an option to take it again. But the option doesn't even come up till wasn't able to do it at all in December. And I wouldn't be able to do it until January. So it's after this meeting has occurred, so it's in the future. The $1,450 impoverished me to the point where I'm now, all my savings is gone. I'm literally down, my entire retirement's now gone through this process of not able to earn a living through not only did COVID create all these problems for me, but the board itself created a lot of these problems for me. I have to calm down just a little bit because I won't communicate as clearly if my blood pressure and heart continue to go. And then my Tourette's syndrome will kick in, and then bad words will come out, and nobody enjoys that. So just pause to breathe and calm myself a bit. The whole thing started because of code numbers attached to renewing the license. You can't renew the license without the code numbers for continuing education. And when I can't find the code numbers, then I can't renew my license. So it has a lot to do with code numbers, logins, the terrible, terrible portal that you use, which your staff member who's in charge of running the computer system there, which is, I'm drawing a blank on what the name of that is for just a second. But anyway, the IT guy tried to tell me that I hadn't tried to log in since April, and I've done nothing but try to log in since way before that. And I have tons and tons of evidence and proof that I've attempted many, many times to get past that portal. What the problem with the board is it has no customer service. And today's a good example. I had very serious problems trying to log in. I tried to log in at 8:45 and gave up at 8. I have it written down, 9:38 or something like that. Because I couldn't get the Zoom meetings numbered right. And I used the letter dated of November when you sent out the subpoena as my basis to try to log in. And I even called a tech person this morning who helped me get past these portals things. Because every job now, even the lowliest McDonald's job requires you to do all this portal stuff, which is way too many logins, way too many passwords. And the boards lock me out, and then I can't get anyone to help me log in. And all this could have been handled very simply by a paper renewal like we always did for like almost 100 years. It's this technology that's just gone wild, and it's not user-friendly. And when I called the numbers, for example, today, I called the board, and I called the investigator, both unavailable. They could have helped me as easy as hi, but they're unavailable. And emails get lost, and phone calls don't get returned. It's just a giant fiasco. And it really, I'm not kidding when I say a kindergartner could fix this. And listen to this one. I can go to the Circle K, I can plug in my driver's license and a credit card and get something that's far more technical because it's banking related, approved using the pump, answering the five questions that were standard on an average paper renewal. You know, have you committed felonies? Or you
Dr. Gunderman, you have just one more minute left.
Okay. So all of this is just snowballing and snowpiling over and over and over. I'm asking that the whole thing just totally be dismissed, completely, all of it dismissed. And we start again with a paper renewal or a paper process. And I'm not going to do online this $1,400 class. I'm going to end up suing her and the company for my money back because they unilaterally decided that I don't deserve it back. And I'm just sick of people piling on and bullying on me for my inability to cope with logins and passwords. And I'm just done
with you, doctor.
And I also have asked Dr. Wayne Bennett recuse himself because I've already lodged a complaint with the governor's office and explained my problem to the Ombudsman. And since he bullied me so hard last time, I never even got to tell the story, and I didn't even have all the information to tell him.
Which Dr. Gunderman, well, Dr. Gunderman.
American with Disabilities Act, with many diagnoses.
Dr. Gunderman.
Yes.
Excuse me. Your time, we've run past the time, and all the information is noted. We understand. Okay?
Very good.
All right. Board members, any questions?
Yes, Madam Chairman, this is Dr. Bennett. First, I have a question from board staff. Ms. Vanderveen, can you kind of walk us through a typical response in terms of what apparatus the board has set up to respond to issues with people have with renewal and pensions before? Yes.
So there is on our website, we have a step-by-step how-to guide posted, which has pictures and instructions that walk everyone step-by-step through the renewal process. We have found that if most people follow those instructions, it's a pretty seamless process. Additionally, staff provides support for unlocking account passwords and unlocking accounts. Sometimes
no support.
It takes a little bit of time to get those. Like, it's not always instantaneous. We respond to emails and phone calls.
I even came in person trying.
Dr. Gunderman, please don't interrupt. You've had your chance to talk. Go ahead.
Provide that support when necessary. Cynthia does have a new option now. I think you'll remember last year there's the security questions, and a lot of times when you didn't answer those security questions correctly, it would lock you out of the portal. There's now, you have the option to either use your security questions or receive a temporary access code. So if you receive that code, you just put it in and it logs you in as that, you know, secondary encryption protection for your account. And so staff provides that. Additionally, in cases where individuals need assistance, upon their request, we will set up a Zoom meeting, and we will walk them through the renewal during the meeting.
Thank you. And approximately how many doctors have successfully logged in and completed their licensure process through Fincia?
Last year, we had over 2,300 licensees complete the process.
Thank you. And how many other state regulatory boards are using Fincia for their licensing renewal process?
I believe there's at least 20.
At least 20. All right. And approximately how many people were able to log into today's Zoom call to attend it?
We have 24 that are on live now, minus a few that have come
joined and left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. Dr. Gunderman, are you currently practicing? I believe you're muted, Dr. Gunderman.
Somebody had muted me.
Are you currently practicing, sir?
No, because you reactivated the probation or whatever. And as of September the 3rd, I was told I cannot practice and have not practiced.
Okay. Thank you. And do you acknowledge that you did not, in fact, comply with at least 5 of the 6 requirements of your probation?
I do not agree with that at all. And here's why. All predicated on sand. Every bit of it is foul from the beginning. And just in, like all legal theories, if the basis is rotten, the whole thing is rotten. And that's where I will appeal this as many times as it takes and in as many forums or judges I have to see until this is rectified the correct way. You've cost me my entire retirement, my entire everything. I'm penniless now. And when I leave this, I will be going to a food bank to get food.
Okay, I'm very sorry to hear that. I understand that you don't agree that you didn't comply. And I understand that you disagree with the process. You've answered my question, sir. Thank you.
You bullied me last time.
The board regarding this matter was a consent agreement, which means he consented and he waived his right to appeal regarding me. He consented to these items when he entered into the consent agreement in November.
Okay. Do we have any record of any kind of dialogue? Dr. Gunderman has stated that he's made multiple attempts and spoken with various people.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have accurate records in terms of what kind of dialogue occurred between Dr. Gunderman and board staff?
I provided you the email that he had been sending to the board. I think on page 4, we provided some of the history regarding his account, and that we unlocked his account back in September. Then we unlocked it again in October, and we provided step-by-step instructions to complete the renewal application. He locked the account again in November, and then he has since provided several very unprofessional emails to boards and board staff. Additionally, back in November, he didn't comply with the requirement that the board asked for him to provide his employment information, and he was providing supervision. So the investigator at the time reached out to him, and then he waited, another 20 days before he responded to that email to notify us where he was currently employed.
And was he employed?
He did. He was working at the joint at that point.
And just another point of question for staff. Again, this is Dr. Bennett. Dr. Gunderman has alluded to the fact that he would prefer to make application by paper.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been an effort on his part to do that in the past, and was it successful?
I believe last year, when he was out of compliance and was practicing and all administratively suspended, he was required to complete a paper reinstatement application, and the board had significant issues getting him to complete that process.
Was that process successfully completed?
With a lot of assistance from board staff.
Okay, so there were difficulties with regard to the application process with Dr. Gunderman prior to the issue of NSHA being put online in our board, along with multiple other boards.
Correct, okay. And in regards to that, I would also remind the board that the initial action back in 2023 was because he was practicing on an administrative suspended license and had been doing so for almost 2 years.
2 years. Thank you. I have no other questions.
Mr. Jurgensen, any questions?
No questions from me. Thank you.
Dr. Camacho.
No questions.
Okay. Shall we deliberate? Dr. Bennett, would you like to start?
Yes, Madam Chairman. This is Dr. Bennett. the concerns we have here really are with regard to whether or not due diligence has been undertaken by the board to deal with the issues that Dr. Gunderman has raised. I believe that we have evidence that that has been the case. The question is to whether or not the pathway that has been offered by the board for compliance is an achievable pathway. I think we have overwhelming evidence that multiple thousands of people have pursued that pathway successfully, and that's just with our board. Other boards have had precisely the same pathway through Sentia, and they have. That's what's going on with all those regulatory boards. And so the only common denominator here is whether or not Dr. Gunderman can be demonstrated to be willing or will able to make this pathway clear. Obviously, we're dealing in it with someone who's adversarial in the matter. And based upon everything that I've seen and what we've heard, there are clear prima facie facts before us that verify that we have serious issues here with regard to the ability for the board to even regulate this individual. And with that, I would move that we open a new complaint for a violation of a board order, and based on the prima facie facts before us, forward the matter directly to formal hearing.
The motion's been made. Do I have a second?
I'll second that
motion. Ms. Vanderby.
Just for one point of clarification, in your motion, that's based on the findings of facts and violations of law set forth in the investigative memo that you received?
Yes.
Mr., are you good with that amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Any further deliberation? Okay,
we have one procedural issue here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure, since you haven't seen the completed investigation, as it were, of the new complaint, whether it can be forwarded immediately to hearing under the statute. So I think what we have to do is both open a complaint for failure to comply with the board hearing or board order, and then let staff put together the investigation, have the board review it, and then make that second decision after that.
Okay.
You just want us to go to just open the complaint, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I would modify my motion to remove the portion with regard to the language and forward directly to formal hearing.
Okay.
So your motion is to open a complaint for violation of the board order?
Right.
Yes, relative to the subject matter that you recommended. I need to check with Mr. Turbinson.
Yeah, this is Mitch Turbinson. I will second that, and that's pursuant to ARS Section 32.924.16.
Thank you, Mr. Turbinson. Okay, we have a second. Any further deliberation? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Yeah, I have it. The motion passes. Dr. Benderman, you'll be contacted by board staff as to how to proceed next. Okay. Next item on the agenda is 13, tab number 7. Am I on the right tab here? Yeah. Okay. Ms. Benderman, please present your report.
Give me one second, please.
Uh-huh. Of
course. First item I have for you today is pending complaints by fiscal year and priority. Just a reminder, we track everything based on the state fiscal year, so July to June. So you can see kind of. And this is by the green of total cases, and then I've broken them out based on the severity. So red is high priority, purple is low, and then blue is medium. So you can see the red cases continue, like, they're growing. So far this year, we've received 2. We have 11 that are blue, and then 3 that Casey and I still have to review and prioritize. Casey and I, just as an update, kind of based on information we've received from the audit, Casey and I meet now with the investigator to determine whether or not to open the complaint. And then assign the severity, and then the next thing we're now addressing is the items to request. So that's part of our intake meeting. So a little bit more of a process than there was in the past, but that's how we're kind of working through these now. So we meet with CC on almost a monthly basis to go over cases.
And you've developed, this is Angela Fowler, you've developed a process for determining what you want to subpoena or a protocol.
Okay, yeah, so based on the information we received in the complaint, Casey kind of talked through with the investigator, and we kind of talked through what we think we need for the initial subpoena, okay. Recognizing that should we identify after getting that initial subpoena, if we need additional information, that we can go back and request that additional information.
Excellent.
So trying to make sure that those subpoenas are limited when that's good.
Thank you.
Total, this is total complaints at or pending initial action. So you'll notice that, like, those are the blue cases are still, so they're open. There's cases that are open on this chart, and then there are ones that still need to go to initial action. And those are the blue ones. So we only have cases in 2023, 24, and 25 that still need to go to initial action. Everything else has been through initial action, and they've either and it would be at a formal hearing or is stayed. So we have a total of 73 open cases right now.
All right, question?
Yes, sir.
Dr. Bennett, can you go back to that slide? Mm-hmm. How do we have open cases in 2025 already?
Because we're in fiscal.
Okay, thank you.
So it started in.
I should have thought of that.
Yeah, right. And then this is total cases closed by priority based on the board meeting. So the green is the number of cases on agenda that were closed, so not the total ones. And then based on their priority is the red and the blue. So medium and low are blue, and then red is the high priority case. Like you'll see this meeting, there were 9 items on the agenda. We haven't closed them yet, and then I'll break them out to show how everything was addressed today. So you can see since April, we've had kind of as we've been onboarding new investigators and kind of moving through the last parts of the audit and onboarding additional staff, that there's it's been a little bit slower, but we're starting to push back in that upward direction. This is just letting you see total number of cases that are open to close. So only have cases that are open in 21, 22, 23, 3 in terms of a look back. My goal is, as I stated in the last board meeting, is to have 2023 fully closed by the end of our meeting in January. So that is our goal there, and we are working aggressively toward that. This is the total number of cases over 180 days, and you can see that we've just really consistent at the moment, just hovering at that 56 cases. So hopefully addressing the case, the last of those cases in January, we'll get that number back down. And then to having the 2 investigators fully onboarded, we should start to see significant improvement in this. This just shows that we have those 5 cases that have been staged that we're working through, needed some additional information and just kind of coming back to and addressing. So we're working on those as well to get those ready and brought forward to you so we can close these cases. Next is licensing applications received versus licenses issued. So far this year, we've received 38 applications. We've approved 40. You can kind of see that trend is picking back up in regards to licenses. Renewal applications received. We are moving into the start of that rolling renewal calendar, so I'm going to just start tracking this monthly for you all. So right now we've received and processed 55 renewals for the renewal season for basically 26 renewal a year ahead. So starting in 25, they'll be renewing for 26. So far we've received 55, so things are moving, renewal cards are going out, notices are being sent, emails, all of that is happening behind the scenes. So, and people are responding and starting to renew. So, and we are getting those phone calls, I can confirm that for sure. Continuing education applications, we've received 93 applications so far this year. We have processed 62, and we have 31 pending. Now for the board's financial, I feel like maybe somewhere in the discussion, but at the end of the last legislative session, so back in July, due to the budget shortfall that the legislature felt was pending, they went to all of the boards and all of our, what we would call our reserve account. So any money that we bring in revenue that's over our appropriation, or any money that we have not spent in our past year's appropriation, goes in what's called our revolving fund. And so that's there, right? And sometimes when we make budget requests, that's how we ask for money for like one-off for equipment, things like that, when we make our requests to the governor's office. So some of you will recall, because you were on the board at the time, we had concerns about the transition from the renewals, right? So the way the calendar year works for renewals versus the state fiscal year. So moving to this new cycle, when we start renewing in January, meant that for fiscal year 25, we were only going to collect 50% of the revenue that we normally would have collected in a single calendar year with renewals, which means, just to talk in broad terms, the board brings in about over $500,000 in revenue for renewals. And that's the majority of where we have our funds to function. So that usually all comes in December annually, because of how the renewals work. Because of changing to the revolve, like the monthly renewals by month, we would only collect revenue from January to June this year. So that would be only like $250,000. So that we preemptively said we were going to have everyone extend, and that's why we were charging that extension fee, was to make sure that the board stayed solvent as we adjusted to this process. So I made that statement numerous times to the governor's office. I made it to OSPB, which is their budget office. And when they did the budget for 2025, part of what they did is called a fund sweep. So they looked at the amount of money in our funds, which at that time was $1.1 million, and said, based on your appropriation, we're going to remove $500,000 of your licensing fees and put that in the general fund. Then additionally, we are what's called a 90-10 board, which means we get to keep 90% of all the revenue we take in. We pay 10% of that revenue into the state's general fund. That is no longer the case. It is now we keep 85% of our revenue and 15% goes to the general fund. So in this process, the legislature took of the licensing fees $500,000. We are appropriated at $643,000. That left us, when they took that sweep, that left us with, we did not have $1 million. We had $971. When they took that 500, it took us to just over $446,000. That's where the fund sits at the moment. Obviously, we get paid a quarterly appropriation to keep us funded. So if you look at this chart, what you see in red are the expenditures, and then what you see in yellow is the revenue. All we have right now coming in is licensing revenue. We don't have any renewal revenue coming in, because that's not really projected to start until January. So I just kind of wanted to clarify like where we are in terms of our fund. And you can kind of see that in this account too. Like you can see our expenditures pop way up because we had an expenditure of $500,000 that was about the amount of our annual appropriation. We are currently, because of vacancy saving, we are under our appropriation amount, but we also have that much lower revenue coming in. I did kind of map out where we are, where I think we're going to be. In terms of our appropriation, if we continue spending at the rate with salaries and all of that, even with adding the additional staff member, we should be under our appropriation by $56,000.
That's a good thing, because they won't take it.
Well, it's a good thing, because if revenue doesn't come in as projected, we have some cushion, is more so what I'm kind of getting to.
That's pretty close.
So
how do we increase appropriations?
That's part of the budget process. So we ask for that annually with the governor's office. I did not, in this year's budget request for 26, we did not request any additional staff. I made a request for $50,000 for enhancements to Ventia so that we could automate the renewal process and just make it a more automated process, so that as soon as you put your renewal in, you get your response. Like, you get your response, and then we just audit on the back end with the broker. That was my proposal, because if we can forego hiring what I would call a renewal specialist to manage this process over the term of 5 years, it's about a $250,000 saving to the board in terms of having that physical employee here. So that was my recommendation. Part of the discussion that we've had, and I've had with about some of the proposed language, if there was to be a chiropractic bill, would be to take out the fund requirements and just allow the board to set those by rule. Because we are at the ceiling for all of our fees. So there's some discussion in that, and there's some other things you have to consider. So I'm working through some of that. But if if renewals continue as projected and the income comes in, I'm projecting that the fund will be at like $231,000. We should be okay. But I felt like maybe I needed to clarify where some of this money went.
We thought you took it already.
I have a question, if I may. What this means to our doctors, our licensees, is that $500,000 of money that they paid for chiropractic licensure process and regulation by this board is not going to be spent for that. It's going to be spent in the general fund for whatever our legislature decides that it's going to be spent for. In the past, there have been similar efforts that were contested, I believe, by the dentists, if not.
And quite a few of the associations got together.
Yeah. You know, if there's, it would seem that providers of any regulatory board that was swept in this fashion would get clients to join up and make their voices heard. It seems as though doctors feel like they're paying for licensure, money should go for licensure, mm-hmm. at least 90 or 85% of it. Mm-hmm. Are you aware of any efforts currently to
not necessarily heard? In that regard. I think there's some discussions about making some changes legislatively and working with the legislature to set a cap on the amount of funds that a licensing board could hold in their revolving fund. And that maybe it would be like 2 years of your appropriation plus 10% or something. And that if you had that cap in place, like if you were under that cap, it would kind of protect you from a fund sweep. But also that should you go over the cap, the mechanism is then instead of being flexed, that the board would be responsible for eliminating or reducing fees until it came back underneath. That there is discussions about that, and it sounds like that might be moving forward.
Okay.
The only other thing that I wanted to provide an update on, we are still working with the Centia consultant for improvements to Centia and automations in Centia. That is going well. And then also I was remiss and I didn't announce to you all that we have hired a new licensing administrator. That is Nikki Sewell. She's sitting down there on the end. There's some questions about she'll be doing licensing for us plus renewals. So she's on that. And then down there on the end, she's our newest addition in Amber.
I wondered who that was.
She's going to be our administrative assistant. So, and then I have posted the deputy director position and I have interviewed tomorrow. So that will be our sixth position and we'll see where we shake out after that.
Then how many employees will we have?
We will have a total of six.
Long time.
We were, so we, like when I started, we were at four. So we've made significant strides. That completes my report. Do you have any questions?
Yes. When do we have our end of the year party? I'm just kidding. Okay, that's good.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Vandereen.
Oh, another thing. I know you told me to take my hat off. I have an excuse. Yesterday I was removing a garage door opener, and I thought I had it pretty well set. And when I go like this, the dang thing falls right on my head, and I got a slack right here. So
we wouldn't have even noticed.
You would have noticed that where I am.
Okay. So it is 11:39. We can take a quick 10-minute break, and then we'll reconvene and finish up our agenda. Okay? 10 minutes. Session?
Where are you, Stacey?
I guess so. Okay. Next on the agenda is item 14, which is a training for board members and board staff on ex parte communications, security, board member role, communications with board staff, and maintaining confidentiality. This training will be provided by Arizona's Attorney General as part of the board's ongoing mission to ensure that we are compliant with Arizona statutes and rules.
All right. Well, at least Arizona's Attorney General is, and that's a mouthful, but I will try and keep it simple. So I'll take it a little bit out of order, too, because I'll start with board member role, because then I think everything else fits in nicely to that theme. So as board members, you all are decision makers for all of the cases and controversies that come before the board. And as decision makers, it's crucial that each one of you remains fair and impartial and decides each of these cases on their own merits. So sort of that foundation laid, you'll understand where I'm going here with the problem with ex parte communication. So generally, an ex parte communication is just, it's a communication between a decision maker and only one side of an issue in the absence of the other side. So think of like if a judge met or had lunch or something with one attorney or one the plaintiff or whatever, and defense wasn't there, or even in some cases, if a member of the jury went out and talked to someone on their own, creates all sorts of problems. You hear things that the other side doesn't necessarily have the opportunity to respond to. It can be misleading. You can be subject to some misleading information. And if you use that misleading information, you can come to the wrong result. Everyone needs to have the same, what it's as board that has multiple members, everyone needs to have the same information. So, like the jury example. Otherwise, you get problems with the decision and what it's based on, and it's not what is before the board. There's also public meeting law issues potentially with that, because the board's a public body, and so should not be conducting any official business outside of a forum. It really sort of impugns the decision maker. It gives the appearance of favoritism, impropriety, or bias, which then casts doubt on the whole process. Some do's and don't ever. This should be new to anyone here. But do not talk to anyone about specific facts of a board case before, during, or after a board meeting or hearing, or while the matter is on appeal. And don't talk to anyone outside about a matter that could foreseeably come before the board. If that happens, tell them you cannot discuss any specific facts of the case, and then if you did, you'd have to disqualify yourself, and you can direct them to board staff if they have any questions or need to communicate to the board.
That's the question.
Yes.
So when you say that, you mean to, like, when individuals contact members of the board about, like, their license application or their renewal application or any of those items, that's why those things should be directed to board staff?
Yes.
The applications, things of that nature, because any of those items can potentially come before the board. And you've now engaged in a dialogue regarding that.
The word keyword being potential.
Potential, right. And the reason they may be, the reason maybe their renewal application hasn't been processed is it's now in the queue pending board approval because we can't approve it.
Right.
Right? So a CE application, maybe it's in the hopper, and it's getting ready to come before you, or we haven't reviewed it yet, and then now it needs to come before you, and you've been like, I'll get to the bottom of this. I'll absolutely help you. This should be resolved. You, of course, should have your license. Now all that's been stated, and you didn't have all the information. So I understand your absolute desire to help and assist the licensee population, but the appropriate direction is to point them to me and staff and allow us to resolve those things so that you remain that impartial jury.
Okay. And I don't want to take a lot of your time now, so you could have very specific questions to staff about that later. Okay.
Okay.
doesn't this ex parte communication apply more to a legally open case where something there's going on? And it's a legal case, and that's where there should be no communication other than with all the parties involved.
Either an open case or something that could potentially become an open case. So
right.
A closed, completely closed, there's it's been adjudicated by the board, and there's either the appeal is done or the timeline for appeal is done. So a totally dead matter is not. And to Alyssa's point, also from sort of a 10,000-foot view, those licensing decisions, those are board decisions. That doesn't have any inherent authority itself that comes from the board. So even though the board itself does not engage in the daily licensing process, it's still board authority that they're exercising. So Let's see what. All right. So, and then from that, so that said, the board members' roles as decision makers and ex parte communications. Another sort of part of that is just like jurors are instructed not to do this, board members should also not do this. Do not go out and do any investigation or research on any cases yourself, because it creates a lot of the same problems that ex parte communications would. You now have information the rest of the board doesn't have. That information may be wrong or biased. That is staff's job. Let staff do the investigation. Once staff completes its investigation, staff brings that investigation to you all. If you have further questions about the investigation at an open meeting, you can direct staff to look into this or that. But don't do it. Don't do it on your own. Don't do any research, and don't direct staff how to conduct its investigation outside of a board meeting, because then you're getting yourself involved in the investigation process, which is really not your role. Let's see. And I guess sort of on a last point here, those investigation materials that you get from staff ahead of these board meetings, and a lot of other stuff that you get in your materials prepared for these board meetings are all confidential. So they are for your eyes only, and no one else. So not your wife, not your sister, not your cousin. Do not leave them on a laptop open at a coffee shop so that someone can see them. Those are confidential. Do not want to inadvertently be disclosing any confidential materials that could create what problems if that happened. And so it's incumbent on you all, once you get them those materials, to maintain their confidence, be on top of security. So, like I said, don't leave your stuff open where someone else can see it. And a hot topic here that comes up, been coming up to a few of my boards and also at all of these conferences, is the use of AI for some of this stuff. So when it's used in this context, it needs to have the agency or whatever public body needs to have very specific language in its user agreement with the AI company. Because the way that these large language models work is they basically scrape all the data that goes into it and use it to improve the model. So if confidential information gets into it, you can't really put the metaphor is here, but the cat's out of the bag, the horse is out of the barn. You cannot unring that bell. So unless there's the Alyssa or the board comes to some sort of specific use agreement with AI, as tempting as it is, do not use it in any circumstance that you might give it access to confidential information, because you cannot fix that once it's out there.
So no one, and no organization, no person, no one should have access to your board account?
Correct. Correct. You shouldn't even, I mean, strictly speaking, you shouldn't even have your laptop open in your house where your wife can walk behind you and see what's on it.
Right.
To the point about the AI, that is all governed. That's not something necessarily that falls to the board. That's all governed by the state.
and you all have signed user acceptance agreements as part of your onboarding process. And part of that is that you will not use any software or anything that is not approved by the state security team. And so there's a whole cybersecurity side of the state, and that's where all of our IT comes from. So only certain things are approved. So unless you have gotten it from board staff or something, it is not an approved application. So anything that's like Google Gemini or ChatGPT, anything that's out there, that's all open source. That is not proprietary information. So unless it's something like the state's in the process of executing their agreement with Gemini, so that is something that we're looking at, that has not been executed yet.
Swim around in their own legal world.
And I think that's it for my training, but if anyone has any questions.
Pictures, just a second, but I'll talk to you soon, Mom.
Any questions? Any board members? Mr. Jervinson, any questions? Okay. Moving along. It is now time for our call to the public. Report from the chair. Okay.
Any chairman's report?
I do not have a report beyond that training report. Madam Chair's information.
So, as you know, we just come through an audit. Alyssa prepared very well for it and presented information to the auditors that was on point, and they gave us a look at the preliminarily at the report, and I can tell you very little, but I want you to know that as a result of that meeting, there were certain things that they didn't really fully understand or know, and we were able to give them more information, to give them more clarity, and it was agreed that the possibility of that they would possibly go back and change the word here or there and tweak this report so that it more accurately represents the events of the past couple of years. And I was pleased, Alyssa was pleased. I think we can use this report in a really positive way, and that's what we're going to do. And you'll be happy to know that there is a crime problem there. We've done good. I was pleased. I think they were too. In fact, at one point I felt like maybe they were nitpicking, but that's their job, so we let that go. And that's really all I have to report. Okay? So, shall we do a policy?
So, item number 17 is any future agenda items. Is there anything at this time that any board member or the chair would like to be placed on the agenda for future?
Anyone? No, I guess not. We're good.
No, now you can be called.
Next on the agenda is item 18, a call to the public. You have up to 2 minutes to make a statement on the record. This is not meant to be a two-way dialogue. The board may not discuss or take action on matters raised during the call to the public that are not explicitly identified on the agenda, but may respond to criticism, ask staff to review a matter, or ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. The board may impose on speakers responsible time, place, and manner restrictions. Speakers are cautioned to refrain from discussing confidential information, and if such dialogue occurs, that dialogue will be terminated. We will now take comments via Zoom. Do we have any? Don't see any hands raised. Second chance, anyone? Third chance, calling out to anyone via Zoom who would like to make a statement. Hearing none, then the call to the public is finished.
Is there anyone in person?
No,
I left. For the record, there was no one in person that wished to make a statement. The next regularly scheduled meeting is for Wednesday, January 15th, 2025.
Before we adjourn, I need to go back to an item in my report that we did not address.
Okay.
I was expecting and planning on having a two policies ready for your review and approval, which was complaint timelines and board meeting preparation, but due to some unforeseen circumstances, those were not completed. So I would just like to request that the board grant me the ability to go ahead and move this item to the January agenda. That would be agreeable.
So it takes a motion?
I don't need a motion. I just am looking for, are you okay with
it? Okay. Okay. Can everyone agree with that? Okay. All right. And now?
Now.
All right. Our next regularly scheduled meeting is for Wednesday, January 15th, 2020.
Sorry.
Oh, change it. 22nd, 2025, at 9 a.m.
22nd.
Yeah.
At 9 a.m., 1740 West Adams Street. And will it be Boardroom C?
Yes.
Boardroom C. The time is 12:11, and this meeting is adjourned.